Once we establish then the number of mitzvahs, once we establish the fundamentals of Judaism, what is it based on, and why do we actually follow this? Because our fathers and our fathers and so on, they saw this. There was a testimony over there. Then a few questions might come up. And he goes into an interesting list. He goes like this. Maybe you can ask, what is this tradition? Because after all, okay, my father told me I'm a Jew. And his father told him he's a Jew. And so on. After all, it comes out to a tradition. Where you actually, like body and soul, standing on Mount Sinai, hearing God and seeing God? No, I wasn't there. Maybe we can argue the soul was over there. And actually, our sages do say that. The soul of every single Jew was over there standing. Very nice. But you know what? I'm not just my soul. I'm a soul of my body. And right now, I'm Tuvia, and I wasn't standing over there. In soul and body, I mean, physically speaking, I wasn't there. So if I say, yeah, Mount Sinai and the giving of the Torah is a tradition. It's a tradition. If you're going to ask me, what is this tradition you have? Why should you ask your parents and the parents of your parents and so on, your elders? Why should you go ask them what they received as a tradition? This whole thing of tradition, I don't believe in that. This is what he's asking. I don't like this because people say, why don't you go and find out yourself? Why don't you analyze the world? Look around you and try to find information within the world, like analyze stones, analyze the trees, analyze whatever, animals, human beings. Why do you have to go ask old people, elder people? They don't understand anything. You know, they're old, they forgot already. What is this whole thing of tradition? Why is tradition so important in Judaism? That's the question. Why is tradition so important? And I'm going to answer you, he says. Because the truth is, you can analyze whatever you want. But by analyzing, you will never come to God. You will never come to godliness. Elohim, Elokus, divinity. Why? Because even the most wise scientists of nature, and we're talking about year 1300s or whatever, even them, they cannot come to the end and to understand completely every single thing in creation. Even if you analyze, till today, they always find new things. They always bring down a theory and they bring another one. They reject one and that was an old one. It doesn't work anymore. So let's put another one and let's think something new and so on. Because who can actually tell you all the amazing things every single piece of grass has, like for healing and so on, and all the fruits, and all the stones, and precious stones, and the reason why everything moves, and the reason why every single component in earth is the way it is, who can actually understand the end of it, so to speak? Go to the deepest and deepest and deepest knowledge and say, raise your hand and say, I understand everything. Even if you don't understand every single thing, you're like, take one subject in life, ask one doctor, do you understand everything in medicine? Nobody's going to say yes. Nobody. I understand this field of medicine. I'm good at this. Do you understand everything? No. I'm good at this. I don't understand everything. I'm working on it or whatever. Nobody's going to say yes. I understand everything to the end of these cells and so on. And the elements of... No. Nobody can say such a thing. So, in other words, that means that even though it is, this the text doesn't say, I'm adding it to understanding it a little bit better. Even though God, with his infinite kindness, he, so to speak, hid himself in the world in a way that we can analyze the world and see godliness up to a certain point at least. We cannot see God, but we can see godliness, how everything is completely ordered, and how everything has a purpose and a reason why it's there, even though we don't understand the reasons, but certainly everything, every single thing has a reason, and with time and with scientists and so on, we come to understand the reasons of things, and then we go deeper and deeper. Even though God, again, hid himself in the creation, but just by analyzing creation, it's impossible to come to godliness. You can understand that there's a creator, because a physical thing, a material thing, does not make himself. I didn't make myself. A stone doesn't make itself, and so on. So if there's a material world, that means somebody did it. Things make themselves. Don't come to exist by themselves. There's no such a thing as spontaneous creation. Even though some scientists want to say today that there is such a thing, but the truth is, it doesn't make any sense at all. Because we see in reality that such a thing doesn't exist. So if scientist wants to bring a theory and try to explain certain things and certain particles and blah, 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 but the truth is, we cannot prove it in a real, practical, simple world. Never a thing just came up and started being, at least a material thing. Therefore, if there is a material world, then definitely you need a creator. And you can see the chokhmah, the wisdom of the creator within the world, how every single part actually works and it's combined with other parts and so on. You can understand this. This is interestingly explained in Choyves HaLevovis, Duties of the Heart. He has a whole portal talking about this, analyzing the world. Shaar HaBechina, the portal of analyzing and understanding the world. Look at the world around you and you will see wisdom, the wisdom of God. So you can come to the conclusion that there is a God. But you can't understand divinity. What actually means God? What is he? What does he want from me? You're not going to see that in creation. No. You're not going to see that in creation. That's why we need tradition. That's the point he wants to bring out. That's why you need tradition. Because if it wouldn't be for the tradition, it's not enough with analyzing the world around you, it's not enough to come to a conclusion of divinity, of purpose. You just see that there is a creator. You come to the rational conclusion that there is a creator. And he brings an example, a very interesting example. It is like this. If you have a testimony of thousands of men that you should not drink certain water from a certain river, don't drink it, because that water, it's actually a poisonous water, whatever, and it kills anybody that drinks it. And many people tried this already thousands of times, and people died from different places in the earth. They came and they drank and they died and so on. And comes one wise person, one chacham, a very wise person, and he's a very, very expert doctor. And he says, don't believe them. Don't believe all of them. Because I'm going to show you from a perspective of wisdom that this water, it's okay. It's not a problem. You can drink this water. Because this water are actually refined, and this water is so good, and the dust and this and that is very good. You're gonna be fine. You can drink it. Now, the question that's the example. The question on the example is, are you going to believe this guy? You have thousands of people from different places in the world that they say the same thing. Don't drink this water. It's going to be a problem. And you have one guy that he thinks is wise, and we know he is a wise guy, and he says, yeah, you can drink the water. Whom are you going to believe? Any wise person is not going to listen to this Chacham, this wise guy, and you're not going to do what he says. The same thing happens with tradition. We have thousands of years of unchanged tradition from different places in the world, different types of Jews, so to speak. They all say the same, and they all have the same stories, and they all have the same ideas, and so on. I heard once an example, very interesting. If you ask any Jewish child from any school in the world who brought out the Jewish people from Egypt and led them through the desert and so on to the land of Israel, every single child, no doubt, is going to answer Moshe Rabbeinu, Moses. He did it. He brought the Jewish people out of Egypt and he led them and so on. But if you ask, whatever, any American, what was the name of the captain of the ship of the first, you know, first Americans that came to United States and they landed in the new land and a very good land and so on. Probably nobody knows. I don't know, at least, but I'm not American, so it's not a proof. But probably nobody really knows. They have to go to the books and find out what was the name of the captain. Captain blah, 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 which I don't know. People don't know. So here you see what a tradition actually means. Tradition means that we keep the information from generation after generation in an unchanged way. Of course, there are mistakes and there are human mistakes throughout this chain of tradition. But it's very subtle and it's very small. Because again, you can always check out the tradition. It's not just your family has the tradition. There are thousands of families around the world in different places, in different times and so on, different cultures. They all have the same tradition. So if your tradition starts being changed, immediately go check out with other families and you will find out what's the true, so to speak, tradition. That's why actually we need a tradition. Point number one, because this leads us to godliness, to purpose. Not just the creator, to understand, not just the fact that there is a creator, to understand the creator, to understand that there's a purpose and there's a message that God is giving to the world through the Jewish people and to the Jewish people and so on. That's question number one. Tradition, it's a very important thing. Because you will not reach the same heights with analyzing things. You will never get to God, to the essence of God. You will get to the fact that there is a God. Second question he poses, very interesting. If you're going to ask me, what is this thing that God gave the Torah to human beings? Everything that God does, it's a very lofty thing, and it's an infinite thing, and for his infinite glory. And the fact that there's human beings down here understanding God and knowing God, that doesn't add to him any glory or anything. He is the plenity of everything. He's completeness of everything. So why did he give the Torah over here to human beings? And the answer is very simple. Because human beings cannot understand the ways of the Creator to know why he does things. We don't know. This is the first answer. It's going to be another one. We don't know why. Because actually part of the answer is, you want to understand God? You don't understand who you are and who God is. You are limited. You're a human being and God is infinite. You'll never understand God. And this is actually a verse. My thoughts, says God, are not like your thoughts. And my ways are not like your ways. You'll never understand me. Having said that, so again, even though we don't understand really why God decided to give us the Torah, however, we can still give some kind of reasoning. Everything that God does, there's a reason for it, and there's a need for that. And therefore, we can say that the fact of God giving the Torah for us, human beings, to know him, this is something necessary for his glory. Even though he doesn't need our knowledge to add him glory. However, it's a good thing for him. In the words in Hebrew, mechuyeves l'malasi. This is something that is necessary, important for his virtue of godliness, of God. That since he had the thought of creating the world, so therefore the world has to be complete and complete in action. Also, we have to act in a complete way. If we wouldn't know God, we would be incomplete. And therefore, God's creation would be incomplete. Because we wouldn't know our Creator, and we wouldn't have a path in order to connect to him. So in order for the world to be complete, for God's creation to be complete, the creation needs a way to connect to godliness, a way to connect to his Creator, its Creator. And that's the reason we gave the Torah. God completed, so to speak, the creation, made it full and complete, by him giving the Torah down here for us to understand whatever we can understand of his greatness or of his being. And even though God created angels, and though the angels also understand up to a certain point godliness, however, human beings can reach much higher levels even than the angels. Because the lower a thing actually reaches, which would be the human being, is lower than the angels, the higher actually we can actually reach. I said the same word like 10 times, but the lower a thing is, that's a proof that comes from a higher place. That means that if God created human beings down here, and human beings are spirituality mixed with materiality, the purpose of that is that even materiality should understand godliness, not just spirituality. If God would have created just angels and would have stopped over there, and the angels understand God, he didn't go to the full of his capacity, so to speak, to create even a being that can go against him. A being, the human being, that can say, you don't exist, I don't care about my creator, I'll do whatever I want. An angel cannot do that. Angels can't rebel. Angels are perfect, so to speak, and they do exactly what God tells them to do, just like an animal. That's why angels are actually called animals, holy animals. The point over here is that God went so far up to create a being, a human being, a creature that can go even against the will of God, has free will. That's the biggest gift human beings have. That means that we have the capacity of connecting to his essence even higher than the angels. Even higher than the angels. Again, summarizing this second question, the idea why God gave the Torah to us, to human beings, it's in order to fulfill a completeness, to get a completeness in his creation, that even down here, he can be understood, at least up to the capacity of a human being. And then he goes to another question, which is very interesting, at least to me. Why did God give this Torah to one people, to the Jewish people? So again, you gave the Torah in order for people to understand you, to know you, to reveal your presence, even in the physical things. That's why you gave the Torah in a physical body and human soul and so on. However, why did you give it just to one people? Give it to everybody so everybody can understand. Why do you have Jews and non-Jews? And he explains a very interesting thing. It is known. It's a known thing in the world, in this low world, that you have a big amount of a low level thing and a small amount of a higher level thing. And he gives an example, very simple thing. Animals, take animals. There are many, many more animals than human beings. Many, 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 many more animals than human beings. Take just the insects. There are millions and millions of insects around the world, or any other type of animal. Plants, millions and millions of pieces of plants and so on, more than human beings. So there's more of a lower level and there's less of a higher level. There you got human being, Jews and non-Jews, compared to the rest of the creation. And then he goes further. He says that within human beings also you have many, many more non-Jews than Jews. And then within the Jews, you also have many, many more common, so to speak, quote-unquote, Jews. There are no Koyanim, no Levim, no priests, or whatever that means, Levites. I don't care. It's not the moment now to explain the whole thing. There are many, many more simple Jews, like me, than Koyanim, priests, or Levites. That means that there's like a pyramid over here. And the idea behind this pyramid, why is it like that? Is because every single thing needs leaders to hold strongly to a specific thing in order to actually share it with the rest. But not everybody can be a leader. Not everybody can be on top of the pyramid, so to speak. So therefore, the way God gave the Torah is to one people in order to share it with the rest of the world. And that's why he continues in the introduction, you have also a message in Judaism for non-Jews. You have the seven mitzvahs, Bnei Noach, of non-Jews, and he actually, interestingly, in further in the book, in mitzvah 416, he gives a whole explanation out of this, of seven mitzvahs and so on, and he says there are not just seven things, there are seven things that are general ideas that actually include thousands and thousands of small points, small ideas, ramifications of these seven things. It's not just seven mitzvahs and that's it. No. And he put the Jewish people, so to speak, on top of this pyramid in order to teach these, the regular commandments to the rest of the Jews and these seven mitzvahs to the rest of the whole world in order so that every single human being in the face of the earth can come to what we said before, the understanding and the knowledge of godliness, of God. Okay, so we understand why, that's the third question, why God gave the Torah to one people. Because you need leaders. Imagine a soccer team, a football team. Everybody's the director. Everybody runs, everybody's the captain. You can't. You have a captain in the team, and the captain, whatever, leads the team to a victory or whatever the case is. That's exactly the same thing within human beings. And also human beings compared to animals. It's not the same thing. You have many more animals than human beings. All right, let's continue. Then he goes to another question. Wait a second. All right, you're telling me the Jewish people are the leaders. And you're telling me they have to share the Torah with everybody else and so on. Why do they suffer so much? Why do they suffer so much? It's so difficult for them. Exile, anti-Semitism. Why is it so difficult? And he answers that every single person in the world knows that there are actually two worlds. There's a physical world, a world for the body, and there's a world for the soul, a world for the soul. And the world of the body actually consumes, and a person is born and passes away. And actually, also in this book, Choivis Alevavois, The Duties of the Heart, brings a very interesting thing. As soon as a person is born, he's starting to die. He started dying. Because time passes and whatever we have, we are all born with a date of passing away. Not a minute more, not a minute less. And God gives us exactly the amount of time we need in order to fulfill the mission he's expecting of each one of us. So there are two worlds. And the body is just like a shade that goes away. But the soul, it's an eternal thing. The soul never dies. And the body is like a vessel for the soul. And it's a servant of the soul, the body. And through fulfilling God's will with the body, we can actually access the other world, this spiritual world. So why do we suffer so much in this world? Because the truth is that the tachlis, the objective of life, is not really in this world as we know it right now. Later we're going to talk in a few minutes about Mashiach. That's the tachlis, the objective of the whole creation. In that time, we're going to have both things at the same time. We're going to have spirituality, full complete spirituality, and full complete body, at least. Parentheses, this is the opinion of the Ramban, Nachmanides. Ramban, Maimonides thinks differently. Maimonides thinks that the end of story is a spiritual world. But whatever, we don't go by Maimonides on this one, because Nachmanides, Ramban, was actually also Makubal. His commentary to the Torah brings out very spiritual and mystical ideas. Therefore, the mystical part of Judaism, Hasidus, the Hasidim go after the Ramban on this, Nachmanides. So, having this in mind, in the times of Mashiach, we're going to have both things, so to speak, both worlds at the same time. A spiritual world, God revealed, but in this material world. Having said that, the truth is that we do suffer in this world because the main thing is the next world. And if you're going to ask me, so give me the two worlds right now. all right, I have to suffer in this world in order to access the next world. But what I'm thinking, I don't want to suffer in this world. I want to have a good life in this world and then access the next one. Why don't you give me two things at the same time? And he answers a very interesting thing. He says like this. Look, everybody knows that we are material people. And in any situation in which you mix physicality, material life, you get a sin, definitely. On one way or another, you're going to end up sinning. It's the truth, because the body takes you and makes you do things you don't have to do. That's why, actually, we mentioned before, in the first part of the introduction, that the one of the six constant mitzvahs is don't go astray through your after your eyes, after your heart, because that's the nature of a person. So the truth is that the body takes you to sin, and God, with his infinite kindness, he judges those sins in this limited world, a body, material, limited world. He judges the things we did wrong in this limited world in order for us to have eternal pleasure and life in the world to come. If God would have punished us in the world to come, that's it. It's an eternal punishment. Because anything that happens in the world to come, it's eternal. Never stops, never ends. So if God is going to punish you for your sins that you did in this world, in the next world, you're done. It's going to be an endless punishment. So therefore, in his kindness, listen to this, it's a very interesting idea. In his kindness, he punishes right now. Wait a second, if you're really kind, don't punish me. No, you don't get it. The things you did wrong, you have to pay. You broke things, you have to pay. But the kindness is pay in this world. You're going to have to suffer in this world in order to pay for the wrongdoings that you did and so on. In order for the next world to be all pleasure, all fine, all good. This is the idea the Sefer HaChinuch brings. There are other ideas, but this is what he brings. And to say that nobody's going to suffer, not in this world, not in the next world, that doesn't make any sense, he says. Because if a person, again, has a body that takes him to sin, a person's going to end up sinning. God created this body, and God gave us the option of working on doing whatever we want to do with our body, free will. But most of people sin. Okay, somebody that didn't sin, no problem. So who told you he's suffering in this world? Oh, but we see tzaddikim suffering and so on, righteous people, okay? After all, and he said this before, this is a question that doesn't have a complete answer. Even Moshe Rabbeinu, the Talmud says, even Moshe Rabbeinu asked God, why do the righteous suffer in this world? And the bad people, the evil people, don't suffer. Why? And God didn't answer him. There was no answer to that. So we don't understand. But even having said that, even in that case, we can still say, look, God is going to punish you in this world in order for you to have complete pleasure and complete understanding of God in the next world. And as I mentioned before, there's going to come a time in which we're going to have both things at the same time. Now, if this is the way it is, that there are two worlds, this world, material world, and there's a world to come, he poses another question. Why isn't it mentioned in the Torah? Why? There are many answers to this question. Like, a very deep answer is, which I'm not going to explain all the details, but the very deep answer is, the truth is the other way around. The Torah only talks about the world to come. It's not talking about this world at all. And we say, when it says, for instance, in Parshat Chukot, it says, "Venasati yishmeichem be'itam," I'm going to give you rain in its time and so on. It doesn't mean really physical rain. It's not talking about that. It's talking about something else. But that's a very deep answer. Let's stick to what he answers. Why doesn't the Torah mention the world to come? So he says, look, the world to come, it's something that is very deep, and it's not really known for everybody, like the sun. You don't see it and say, oh yeah, this is the sun. It's something difficult to explain. It's something difficult to understand. And not every single nation can understand it. Not every single tongue can actually talk about it and agree what it is, what it is, what it is not. Because the souls definitely are eternal, but the bodies are not. And nobody argues with this. Everybody knows life has a limit. But eternal life, it's a spiritual thing, not a physical thing, even though scientists today, and for many years already, are trying to find eternal life. Like, I don't want to be old. And the truth is, we all end up dying. It's not a question of time. Like, yeah, science is going to come to eternal life. They can invest millions and millions of dollars. And people, sooner or later, when the time comes, they pass away. Because this is the way God created the world. It's not something we can fight, so to speak, and find a medicine to be eternal life. In fantasy, we can have this, and it's okay. Fantasy is fine. Novels and writers, and that's okay. But the truth is, we all die. Sooner or later. And the world to come again is something so deep, so difficult to understand, that the Torah doesn't talk about it, because the Torah talks in a general way for every single person to understand. Therefore, if you want a person, simple person, to keep the mitzvahs, keep fulfill the commandments, what are you going to tell them? I'm going to give you the world to come. The what? How do you eat that? Okay, let's phrase again. I'm going to give you rain in your field. And I'm going to give you healthy animals. And I'm going, oh yeah, I want that. So I'm going to keep the mitzvahs. I'm going to fulfill the commandments in a proper way. That's why the Torah doesn't talk about the world to come. It's something so abstract, so deep, regular, common people would not understand that. And therefore, the Torah doesn't mention it. The Torah doesn't talk about it clearly. This Torah that we mentioned before, that God gave to his nation, the Jewish people, through Moshe Rabbeinu, his prophet. One of the main things a person has to know on this Torah is that God, the Lord, that is in the heavens above and in the earth down here, like the verse says, gave this Torah to the Jewish people. This God, in Hebrew it's called Matzui Rishon, is a first and fundamental, not first in time, is the first in level and fundamental existence. There's no beginning and no end to his existence. And he made any other existence exist, any other creature be, with his infinite power, from nothingness into somethingness. He created everything. And he sustains every single creature the time that he wants for it to exist, and not even a second more. Whatever time he assigned to every single creature, that creature is going to exist in any way of existence. And there's nothing that can prevent God from doing whatever he wants. And we have to believe on this, that he is one with no association at all. No partners. God doesn't have partners, children or whatever. Not at all. God is alone, so to speak, and no partner to him. Nothing can compare to him. And we have to believe also that when the person fulfills what the Torah says he has to do, the commandments, he will merit in his soul to an amazing and tremendous pleasure forever in the world to come. And we also have to believe that God, he supervises the actions of human beings, and he knows every single detail of every single human being in the face of the earth. And he is going to pay, and he is going to punish every single person according to his deeds. And also, part of the main ideas of the Torah, the fundamentals of the Torah, is to believe that there's a written Torah, which is the text that we have and so on, and there's an oral Torah, which is the explanation we received by tradition, and we explained before what tradition is, actually. We received by tradition from the sages of the Jewish people. They were saints, and they were from ancient times, and they explain every single thing of the Torah, of the written Torah. And any person that would explain something in the Torah different than what our sages explain, it's a mistake. And it's wrong. It's a big mistake. Because our sages received this explanation of the written Torah from Moshe Rabbeinu himself, that he received it from God himself when he was in the Mount Sinai for 40 days and 40 nights. And even though it was very short time, 40 days, it's not such a long time to learn every single thing that we have been learning for thousands of years. However, he could learn this because the teacher, who was God, gave him the possibility to learn it actually. God wanted to teach him in that particular time, and he wanted us to learn the Torah in later times, like today for instance, in a longer period of time. But Moshe Rabbeinu learned in 40 days. He doesn't bring it over here, but it's interesting. There's a phrase in the Talmud in Megillah. The Talmud says in Hebrew, "Kol ma she'talmid vasikasi lechadesh, hakol nitan leMoshe miSinai." Every single thing that an applied student will ever say in the Torah, like somebody that's really a sage, that was also given to Moshe at Mount Sinai, which means Moshe Rabbeinu was given very general rules and general ideas of what the Torah is and the explanation of the Torah. And later, in later generations, generation after generation, the sages of the Jewish people, they analyze these general rules, they analyze the text, and then bring out details that are actually derivatives of these general rules. Moshe Rabbeinu did not hear precisely the detail. He heard the general rules from which you can actually understand the details also. But did he hear the details? It would be impossible. Because, as the verse says, Alamos and Mispar, there are thousands and millions without end of laws. Aloches, laws of this, laws of that, and so on. Therefore, Moshe Rabbeinu received the Torah and he passed it down generation after generation, and it is the task of each generation to extract, using the general rules that Moshe received, the laws for every single time and every single place in the world. This is basically, there's more to it, but this is basically the introduction of Sefer HaChinuch, which I think is very important to understand a general perspective of what actually Judaism is based on and how does it work.